When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maradona smokes and...
Argentina the lead. The England players protesting to the referee.
De halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal. Heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp.
Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp.
So our first guest on the podcast today is going to be discussing Croatia. Zajko, would you like to give a little bit of an introduction about where you're from?
I currently live in Copenhagen. I was studying here, but I'm originally from Umag, Croatia, which is a beautiful city west of Croatia, really close to Italy. Nice beaches, nice sea, nice people. Just visit if you haven't.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So I guess like the first thing I have to ask is, where were you for the World Cup final in 2018? Were you back in Croatia or what was...
So I was here, and when we won the semifinal, I bought a ticket for next day. I paid a lot for it. I flew back home to watch the game, and then we lost. And but it was a beautiful experience. It was very nice, a very good year for us.
After the final loss, was it more of a kind of like pride about like getting so far, or was it still like absolute heartbreak that it was?
Well, we were, at least the group of my friends, we were kind of disappointed, but after half an hour we just started celebrating because everyone was disappointed for half an hour, and then the town where we live just got full of people, full of cars. We had flares, we had flags, so we were just super proud of the achievement, and it was a great feeling. We lost the final, but we got a second place, which is also great.
Yeah, it was amazing. Look, before the tournament, did anybody kind of in Croatia feel that like it was possible that they could go so far, or what was...
Yeah, we had a great European championship 2016. We lost against Portugal in the overtime. Like, we hit the post and then they had a break and they just scored, and it was a huge disappointment also for a lot of players. But then we kind of had a feeling we're going to do something big in 2018. Like, a lot of people.
Since the World Cup, like, the results for the national team have been a bit like uneven, not so consistent. What has kind of that been down to?
Well, I was kind of expected a couple of players retired, and I guess the style of game changed. So we lost Mandžukić and we lost the goalkeeper Subasic. But we brought some new people and some new players to the team. We have a lot of young guys this year. And I honestly, I don't think we're going to do that good this year, but I hope we're gonna do good, but I don't expect anything big this year, unfortunately, but I'm still gonna watch and kind of be optimistic about it.
What's your prediction for the clash with England? Do you think you're gonna
We're gonna destroy the whole
game. No question. That's the spirit.
Yeah.
No question about it. Yeah, definitely. We have kind of rivalry with England. I remember when we beat them at in England. It was 3-2 for us in the end when Russia qualified instead of England. It was a beautiful feeling. Like, no offense to English people.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a big one.
Bit of a bogey team for England, Croatia in years. But
they beat us so many times as well. So it's
For people who are like not Croatian, is there any kind of young player that people may not have heard of so much who might be a bit of a surprise for people to watch out for?
Maybe Brekalo and also Oršić. Mm-hmm. Oršić plays in Dinamo Zagreb in Croatia, and Brekalo plays in Wolfsburg. They're pretty good. Also, maybe Borna Barišić, he plays in Glasgow Rangers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys heard about him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say those three are like pretty good. Also Livaković, the goalkeeper. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who's the one that you would pick to have a beer with?
I mean, it might seem like an obvious answer, but it will be or Eduardo da Silva or Luka Modric, because their stories of kind of how they like overcame.
Yeah. Yeah,
their childhood, it was really hard, and then they just achieved so much success in football and sports and in their lives. So I would love to hear the stories from them directly. It would be amazing.
Yeah, Eduardo da Silva would be a brilliant one, I guess, coming from Brazil, coming to play for the Croatian national team, and then also that awful leg break injury and coming back from that.
If that didn't happen, I think he would be like one of the greatest players at that time in Europe, probably. But unfortunately,
Yeah, I remember watching like his first season at Arsenal. He was just like such a natural finisher.
Exactly.
Just the perfect finisher. Okay, so final prediction for Croatia. What are you saying for this tournament?
I'll say realistically quarterfinals, but optimistically final and winning the whole thing.
Oh, that's the spirit.
We're gonna have 24 people on and 24 predictions for 20 for winning.
You want, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Is there a place in Copenhagen that sort of Croatian people gather to watch the games, or are you just gonna be like?
Usually we meet at someone's place, or we just go to a bar. Nothing special specific. Yeah.
Sometimes I have this thing when the national team plays that I'm too excited that I can't even mingle with that many people, and I'll just sit home with a couple of friends, and then everyone's very excited and excited and just
rooting. And you can do whatever you want, no one will judge you when you break something.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's the fun, like when you watch like an international tournament, like it's fun to watch with like your friends or people you wouldn't normally that interested in football, but then you're like, you get self-conscious about how into it you are. Don't want to be ruining this for everyone. But who is your Croatian team do you support?
Hajduk Split.
Oh, okay, Split. Okay.
Yes.
So okay, cool. So do you have any final questions for Croatia, Leon?
No final questions, but best of luck and enjoy the tournament.
Are you ever getting dressed for it? And let's. I mean, if there's some interesting story with Croatia going far or something, let's chat again.
Sure. Good luck with the podcast, guys. It's an awesome idea.
To get things started, maybe Ross, you can just tell me a bit about where in England you're from, maybe what club team you support, that kind of thing.
Well, I come from Ipswich, so for my sins, I'm an Ipswich Town fan, but I've lived in London for the last 15 or so years before coming to Copenhagen last May, right slack bang in the middle of coronavirus. So yeah, it's Ipswich Town for me. I've got a soft spot for a few other clubs for various reasons, Newcastle United because of Bobby Robson. Arsenal because I lived near the ground, Tottenham because my wife's from there, and that causes all sorts of chaos. it does, but those are so that's me.
A man with fingers in many pies.
Yeah,
keep it direct. And what about in Denmark? Have you managed to work out what Danish team is going to be yours?
Yeah, I'm going to support B93, my friend.
Oh, nice. How come? That's a good underground choice.
Yeah, I live nearby, and I like to support the underdog. And you've got to support a team that's got the most extravagant name in the world ever, B93. It's brilliant, isn't it?
No, we did, on our podcast, we did like a deep dive with our Danish football coach here. Like, why are all the football clubs, there's so many football clubs, which is like with years, right? There's B1903, there's B1911 and stuff like this. And
yeah,
like these clubs with all just like football club and then the year, you know, get to the point.
Yeah, it's very prosaic. I like it. Nothing.
No, Lucas, I think we have the same in Germany, but then it's just like the amateur leagues where these teams kind of still are around. And then the higher you go, the more professional the names become somehow. So.
Yeah, that's it's true, isn't it? I mean, is it Schalke 04? Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they do it elsewhere. Yeah, nothing like kind of a crew Alexandra or like Stanley, you know. B93, my friend, I love it.
What division are B93 in? Are they like they're like 2-1, right? Like the third division.
Yeah, they're like the third division. Yeah, they're not doing terribly brilliantly, but they're a very, I mean, it's like a very family sort of club. They have a massive training program for locals. We live in Österburg, so it's we got a tennis there and football there with my kids, and it's just really big fan of theirs. And come on, you boys, whatever they're called.
Come on, you B93.
Yeah, come on, you B93. I have no idea if they've got a nickname. Yeah. And it's brilliant because their ground, I think their ground is right next to the Copenhagen Stadium. So they've got this massive wall with huge ground right next to it. And then there's this little ground that's the B93 one, which just pales into insignificance. It's quite funny, actually.
All right, so I'd love to do a full podcast on B93.
Next one. We'll pencil it in.
We've got to talk about England.
Yeah, when we're in the Champions League.
Yeah. Ross, what would be, like, if you were to pinpoint, like, maybe a game or a moment was a highlight for you watching the England team? Can you think of, like, a tournament or something that's
really good? Yeah, I'm going to show my age here, but it's got to be the 5-1 victory. Sorry, Leon, about this, but the 5-1 victory over Germany in 2001?
Yeah, that's not
don't remember.
On German soil. Yeah, it's a good one to forget, I guess, if you're German. But it was a cracking game. It was a very, very good quality German side. I was sitting with a bunch of Irish folk actually in a pub in Nice watching it. They decided to support England for some reason, and we just got absolutely hammered watching this game as the goals flowed in. So that one, I think, sticks out absolutely most of all. But there's also 4-1 against the Dutch in 96, Euro 96.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was Sheringham scoring twice, Shearer scoring twice. Again, a quality opposition in the Dutch, and they just got taken apart, and it was a really beautiful thing to watch. If only we could play like that all the time.
Yeah, have you been to any many England games? Or
I've been to a small handful. It's hard to get tickets. You know, you've got to have deep pockets to get to most of the games. So I haven't been to all that many, no. But I've supported Ipswich Town home and away. So I've been to a lot of the great grounds all over. The all over England, and one or two overseas. Inter Milan we played, and Helsingborg we played in the UEFA Cup. But no, not that many England games.
Yeah. So England have Scotland in their group again. Same like with them looking for revenge from Euro 96. Is that a game that you're really particularly looking forward to?
You've got to be. You've got to be interested in games against local teams. Yeah. For me, it's always been a friendly rivalry because half my family is Scottish.
Okay.
So I've had this kind of good bit of banter. And obviously, most of the time, England come out on top, but you just never know. And the Scots want more than anything to put one over England, and who can blame them? So yeah, I'm very excited to see what happens in that game. I do think England will have too much for them. But you never know. If the Scots turn up and England have a bad day, then they really could get that revenge. And, I hope they don't, but half of my family would be very pleased if they do.
What would be worse, if you wouldn't make it past the group stage, or if you would lose to the Scots but still make it?
Oh dear me. I don't know. It would be they're both disastrous, aren't they? I guess if we won the other two games and we made it through, then we would not graciously lose to the Scots. I think that would be making it through to the next round has got to be, whatever happens, the most important thing. Losing to the Scots, yeah, we're just going to have to suck that up if it happens and admit the better team won on the day through gritted teeth.
How optimistic are you about England's chances after going to the semi-finals in the last tournament in the World Cup in 2018? Do you think Southgate can take them further because, you know, they've got quite a young, very exciting squad? Or what is the kind of feeling you've got?
I feel like I've been saying for years that England should be getting rid of old dead wood and bringing in young players. I feel like I've been saying it since, again, I'm showing my age here, since even the 80s. And now they have done so. I'm actually, for the first time in ages, a little bit more confident than usual. I do. Yeah. I've got these exciting players like Sacco from Arsenal. Obviously, players like Trent Alexander-Arnold. All these young, this young crop of players really have got something to prove, and they've got the energy. They've cobbled it together with a few old heads that have been at tournaments before, you know, Maguire and Henderson, even though they're injured. Let's see if they can get fit. And I think I do think that semi-finals is a realistic proposition. If we fall short again, usually we get knocked out in the quarterfinals, as I'm sure you know. But if we make it to the semis, that would be, I think, justification of what Southgate's done. And if we get to the final, then great,
because that's also what he said, right? Anything less than reaching semi-finals would be a tournament failure, so there's definitely the target for Southgate.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, I'm sure that his paymasters will be saying, look, that's the minimum expectation this time. They'll probably let him off if we get to the quarters, but not to get out of the group stage. He's going to want to do some serious thinking about his own future, in fairness. But I don't know. I don't know all that much about the other teams. You look at the French squad and you think, oh, who's going to get past them?
Yeah.
Germany always turn up for tournaments. I know that they've had problems in the last year or two, but who'd bet against them? I looked at the Italian squad and went, goodness me, that's strong.
Yeah, we were just speaking to an Italian fan a little earlier, and he sounded pretty confident, I would say.
Well, I mean, he's got every right to. You look at them and you think, so that's been a fort Spain, of course. Who can ignore Spain? And then you're suddenly thinking semis. I guess it depends a lot on the draw. Whatever happens, you know, who's playing whom in the second round and quarters and all the rest of it. But I think we can make the semis. Yeah.
What would be your putting you on the spot, manager of England, Ross, what is your solution to the four right backs conundrum? Which one of them are you picking, or what are you going to do with the other three?
Well, it's a tough one, isn't it? I've always thought that Alexander Arnold was a real quality player, and I just love his speed of thought in the game against Barcelona a couple of years back that set up the goals that won that match. I think he's got the right qualities, but some of them can play in other positions as well. I think he's been quite canny, because, you know, some of them could flip to left back. They could even play as a makeshift centre half or just in front of defence. So I don't feel like it's for only left backs that are only right backs that are only in right back positions.
Yeah.
They can move around. You know, these players get paid more than you and I are ever going to earn in a week. So they should be able to play in different positions. You know, wing back, they can shove up the field a bit.
I want to ask you about maybe a less positive memory. And the last Euros, England were famously knocked out by Iceland.
Yeah.
What was kind of seen as a very embarrassing loss. Can you remember watching that game?
I can remember watching it, and it was absolutely awful. Absolutely awful game. And I was really, at the end of the game, I was standing up and doing the thunderclap with the Iceland fans, you know, in my bedroom. I was so, you know, it's a population. What is Iceland? 300,000
people. Yeah, 300,000.
And England is 40-something million. And they turned us over fair and square. And I had to hand it to them. My hat was off to them. I'd rather get knocked out by a team with grit and determination like Iceland, you know, than lots of the other big nations, to be honest. So, yeah, it was a bad memory. And poor old Roy Hodgson, who I was a fan of, lost his job or resigned as a result of it, didn't he? But, yeah, you can't lose to Iceland and expect to keep your job, I don't think. So let's just hope it doesn't happen again against, you know, Scotland.
Yeah, there's also, like, in the group, you've got Croatia again, which is kind of a revenge match for the World Cup in 2018.
Yeah, it is. And they, again, I mean, we should have beaten them that game. I really thought that we had the edge on them. But they just had more nous. They had more canny players. Yeah. You know, their players like Modric, who's always been an outstanding player. He's not getting any younger, you know. And I feel that Croatia, I don't know, I just feel like their star has faded in the last since the last time we met. You know, we've met them many times. They turned us over 3-2. Gosh, I can't even remember when that was. It was when Steve McLaren was still in charge.
Oh, before Euro 2008.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. So there's history between the two. And if anyone's got a grudge match, then it's England who needs to have the bit between their teeth. And I do think we've got the young, burgeoning players coming through and they are starting to age a bit. And it's an interesting game, though. It's the one I'm probably just as excited about that one as I am about the Scotland game.
Picture the scenario: England have just won the tournament for their first major tournament since '66. How are you celebrating, Rob? Plan.
Well, as an Ipswich Town fan, I haven't had a lot to celebrate in my life. We won the UEFA Cup in '81, but since then it's been very slim pickings. So I imagine that it will be going out in the town. I only know a few English people here. But I do think that we'll be getting together and getting into town somewhere and celebrating in a nice, positive, gentle way, not like England fans are famous for. and I would just, yeah, absolutely paint the town red. I think that's the idea.
Quiet glass of wine, just to...
A quiet glass of wine and a few beers.
And if you could have any of the players joining you, maybe not that night. I mean, they just won the championship. But like one of the nights later on, to have a beer or a coffee sometime.
Yeah.
Player past or present.
Yeah.
Your pick. Whom would it be?
Past or present? Gosh. Well, in the current crop, I'm a big fan of Tyrone Mings. He used to play for Ipswich. He's an Ipswich boy, but he's also very, I think he's a very nice person. A
very lot of smart, very eloquent.
Exactly. Smart, eloquent. He did some things for, there was a case a while back where a child couldn't get to the game and he bought him a ticket and he got his father in and these kinds of things he's been doing all his career. And I always look out for him when I'm watching Villa. Past or present, I think... Oh, it's a good question. But I think I probably would like to meet Steven Gerrard.
Okay.
And no, wait a minute. I'm gonna trump that with Paul Scholes. He was he's the best player for England in my experience. Absolutely outstanding player. And I love the way he did things. He didn't have an agent, did he? He famously used to just go to Alex Ferguson and say, right, what's the deal? He'd say, this is the deal, and Scholes would go, great, see you later. And I just admired his genius on the pitch. Great player of the ball, great in the air, not a tall player, but a fantastic player to watch, even in the air. Good with both feet. And yeah, I think Paul Scholes, actually.
All right, Ross, thanks. It's been an absolute pleasure. I would wish England good luck in the tournament, but as an Irishman, I would be lying.
Well, at least we're there.
Fair enough, Ross. Yeah, and if England do win it, we will get you back on for the
Yeah, definitely. No, definitely.
If I can string a sentence together at that point, I will.
Even if not, we don't mind.
All right, gentlemen.
All right, enjoy the rest of your evening, Ross. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, boys. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
And it would be lovely if you could just introduce yourself a bit to get us started. Where you're from? Yeah,
of course. Yes, I'm Alan Horsburgh, and for my sins, I am the Scotland fan, talking about the plights of Scotland, but it's a little bit of success. I am originally from the east coast of Scotland, a town called Kirkcaldy. The nearest significant city to it would be Edinburgh, about 30 kilometres away. And I've been in Copenhagen for 3.5 years now.
And I've just been reading the interesting story about how you managed to witness the Serbia penalty shootout for the game which qualified for Scotland. Do you want to explain a bit how you were able to see the game?
Yes, I was one of a few only Scots in the city of Belgrade for that. We were, of course, when the we'd actually three times, I think, booked. When the draw first came out, the whole playoff semi-finals and final was supposed to be like 3 days apart. So we knew if we got through, we either got to Norway or Serbia. So we had like multiple trips booked to get from one to the other. And of course, it got delayed because it cancelled because of COVID, and it was delayed even more. And then finally, when they played, there was a complete blanket ban of anybody travelling from the UK. So of course, and there's no fans inside the ground. But being in Copenhagen, when things were still a little bit more relaxed, it was prior to the ban here, you could still travel. So I'd had accommodation booked, etc., said to the other half, do you fancy a few romantic days in Belgrade? And we then ended up going out for the football. So yeah, so we basically watched we couldn't get into the ground, but during the day we went up to see the stadium, got in through an unopened door. So there's pictures of us, I think you saw in the article, actually standing in the stadium. But then in the evening, went back into Belgrade Centre, watched it in a pub. And as it got, of course, everything was going rosy. We were winning 1-0 with 1 minute to go. And Serbia equalised, typical Scotland style, equalised in the last minute. So of course, when it got to extra time, I quickly realised that this was looking more and more likely it was going to go to penalties. So of course, we'd had a few shandies by then, let's just say. So we thought it was a good idea to jump in a taxi, go back up to the stadium, and we got there just as, by this point, of course, they'd realised to put stewards next to the doors, so couldn't get in, but watched the penalty shoot out through a hole in the stadium.
You were able to see well enough through the door?
Yeah. Could actually see the tiny little bit, so I couldn't see who was coming up to take the penalty, because I couldn't really see to the right, and I could barely see the goal, but I could see by the kind of reaction whether or not we'd scored. So, well, yeah, it was. And then afterwards, as you saw in the article, we kind of hung about outside the ground, and then we were fortunate enough that Steve Clark, the manager, actually came out, and we shouted Steve, and the minute he heard the Scottish accent, he was just delighted to hear a few locals. So he came over, and what's the best thing about the picture is that Steve Clark's known for being quite dour and not a very smiley person, of course, and you see in the picture we just qualified, so we get probably as big a smile as you'll ever see from Steve Clark. And then Carly, my other half, was somebody who works for the paper back in the UK, got in touch and said, we've seen the picture, do you mind putting in the article? There was the slight balance that it was in the Scottish sun, so there was the balance between, do I want to be in the sun compared to getting that out there? So
fame,
getting it out there. The media,
exactly. The media whore in me won out in the end. That's why I'm now on top of
you. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he must have been like, what on earth are you doing here? How did you get here?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, there was two other guys who had come from, we saw in the pub, and they were in their full kilts and everything. And they'd flown from Scotland in the knowledge that when they got back, there was a strong chance they had to quarantine, and there was a strong chance they could be fined. So I think they were even more dedicated than us. But so they were kind of hanging about as well. But luckily, they'd disappeared by that point. So it was us that got all the limelight with the manager outside. But it's good, because without the photographic proof, I think it would probably be the, I was in Serbia. Yeah, of course you were in Serbia.
We all were, mate.
Yeah, of course you were.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So it's good that I've got the actual black and white.
Do you have any more like incredible stories from following Scotland abroad, or like what has been like the more interesting stories you've had?
Yeah, I mean, the last few, I've been I would class myself as a home diehard for sort of 20 years. I've missed very few games at Hampden, maybe five competitive games in the last 20 years, but didn't really go to many of the away games, more through like kind of the friends, my mates that I went to were always kind of just wanted to go back to Scotland, the home games, or of course when I stayed there. But the last few years, met a few boys who wanted to go to a few more of the slightly more exotic trips, let's just say. So in the last few years, I've been to Kazakhstan, which was definitely one of the slightly more random places.
Was that the time that Scotland lost to Kazakhstan?
Indeed, yes, it's officially our worst result in Scottish football history. So we stood there,
and you were the life.
My mate perfectly summed up what it's like to go on a Scotland away trip. It's a fantastic few days holiday ruined by
the match.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it. It's a great trip. It's great to see these different places. The actual football itself. So yeah, the Kazakhstan game, because I flew from Copenhagen, they flew from the UK, we met there. But all in all, it was about like a 6,000-mile trip. So that's what, when we went 2-0 down after 10 minutes, I just turned and said, well, at least we've not travelled 6,000 miles.
At least we'll be home by dinner.
And the worst, I mean, that was a truly fantastic trip. It was brilliant because it was a away doubleheader. But the kind of the worst thing after the Kazakhstan game, not only have we just seen the 3-0 worst result in Scottish football history, then we had to travel to San Marino, which is an absolute lose-lose situation, right? They're the worst team in world football. So it's impossible to kind of get motivated, like, oh, at least we might get a morale-boosting result. You're always going to win. But as it turned out, as we kind of expected, we grind out a not very morale-boosted 2-0 victory, which happened to be then Alex McLeish, our manager at the time. That was his last game.
Three points is 3 points. So,
exactly, yeah. When you're a Scotland fan, you'll take what you can get, right?
So have you got tickets to any of the games here now in June?
So one of the perks of sitting through the likes of the 3-0 loss to Kazakhstan means that I'm fortunate enough to have enough supporters points to, even with the reduced crowd, because of the reduced capacity because of COVID, I have got tickets for all three games. So 2 weeks today at this point, I will either be on a glorious high after we have started our first campaign in 23 years with a victory against Croatia, or I will be drowning my sorrows with and preparing to then face England on the Wednesday. So yeah, so we've got tickets for the two home games and the game at Wembley.
So how do you actually see Scotland going in this tournament? Because qualifying through the Nation League playoff is a little different. Or like, how do you actually rate their chances?
Let me phrase the question differently, because I read that Sky Bet are offering odds at 250-1 for Scotland to win the Euro 2020. So how much money would you bet on them?
I do like the occasional flutter, but I think if I was betting that, it would be with very much with the heart rather than the head, that's for sure. You can also get 150-1 on Shea Adams being top goal scorer, so maybe double those.
Yeah, you'll never get the accumulator.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That sounds fair.
So, how realistically? I mean, so Scotland, as I say, 23 years since we've qualified for a major tournament, and we've never made out of the group stages. Even like long before my Scotland supporting days, when we had the great teams of the 70s and 80s, your Dalglishes, your Sunesis, etc., we've still never made out of a group stage. So, of course, if we can get out of the group stage, they'll kind of be Scottish legends. And the old expression, it's the hope that will kill you, right? I think that's it. Being a Scotland fan, you always need a little bit of hope or you wouldn't continue at it. So I think if you look at the teams, taking the teams just at the surface, then no, we shouldn't be getting through the group, right? We're playing, obviously, Czechs, who've got a good side, Croatia, who were World Cup finalists, England, who, of course, are England, on paper, of course, a substantially better squad. But kind of combination, playing two games at home, even without a capacity.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, probably you guys realise I'm like a mad passionate Scottish fan, and the actual excitement now building is just, it has been, I have literally waited, I was 17 years old when we played at France 98, so I have literally waited my entire adult life to see Scotland play at a major tournament. And it doesn't get much better than playing the old enemy, right? England in that tournament. At Wembley. Exactly, everything. So it's, I've got goosebumps just like thinking about it just now. So just counting exactly 2 weeks. So yes, it's one of those, if England play to their capabilities, then of course they should be beating us. They have some phenomenal world-class players, right? But on that one day, you just never know. So I am quietly confident without being overly optimistic.
Yeah, Alan, I promise if Scotland beat England, we'll get you on for a reaction pod just to the lifetime.
We'd absolutely love that.
You may have a few days for us to all sober up.
Yeah, also just like send in a voice recording just like after the match.
I think it'll be a few days till my voice comes back. We had the I think one of the questions you said about one of the, like, when you think of the happiest moments of and talking about, because that's where England comes into it as well, that both one of the happiest and the most frustrating moments all happened in 5 minutes when we played England the qualifiers a few years ago. We were at home, we were 1-0 down with 6 minutes to go, and then Lee Griffiths scored 2 free kicks in the last 5 minutes. So, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, but if you just watch the highlights, the stadium, the scenes were just unbelievable. Gary Neville, when he was commenting, like, said that the only crowd he'd ever compared to was Aguero when Man City won the Premiership. So the atmosphere was absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, my throat, my voice was gone. And of course, then England equalised in the 94th minute.
In 5 minute little spell.
So the highs and lows of Scotland perfectly summed up in 5 minutes. So yes, we will. For the England game, it is, I really can't wait, and delighted that, although of course it would have been so much better if we're with a full crowd, but delighted we'll at least have a few thousand there. And we're actually going to have more, because of the size of Wembley, we'll actually have more Scots in Wembley for the England game than we will for the home Czech and Croatia games.
That's mad. We have one final question that we've been asking everyone, and it's, who would you like to go for a beer with from the Scotland team, past and present, if you're able to?
Oh, past and present. So that's if it's of all time, then definitely my funny enough, not just because I've got this top on, but he's the man on the back. My two favourite Scotland players of all time are James McFadden, because of what he's done, and although we didn't qualify, the goals he scored and what he gave in the last 20 years. But I was fortunate enough, actually, when we were in Kazakhstan, I met him at the airport on the way back. And because we'd gone all the way to Kazakhstan and they'd lost 3-0, he was happy to talk for as long as we wanted. I feel like they had a duty of care to just be nice to us. Yeah. So I met Scott McTominay as well. He was the same. But my other all-time favourite Scotland player is Ali McCoist. And from the 90s, and I think if it was to choose to anybody to go for a beer, simply because you can tell, I like to tell a story, I think nowhere near Ali's levels. He can tell some great stories. So I would.
Yeah, I'm so disappointed he's not on the commentary team for the Euros.
Yeah, I didn't know that. It's strange because he usually is always on. Him and it's him and who's it? Pilsley, right?
John. No. Champion.
Champion, that's it. Yeah, because they have.
No, John Champion. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't realize.
They had a very brilliant, like, during the Russian World Cup, like a duo thing of like talking about all the history of the city ask Alio, where have you been up to today? Of like, oh, I've been visiting an old communist building or something. This while I'm talking about the commentary of Nigeria, it was brilliant.
It was just great as well that they just went off on such random tangents that you would think if somebody explained that two commentators are going to do, you would be annoyed, right? Talk about the football, but it just worked perfectly. But I didn't realise he wasn't doing the commentary. But yes. Ali is very much the man to go for a pint with.
The man.
Yeah. All right, Alan, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. Hopefully we can talk again soon.
Yeah, this was incredible.
The other is saying about just the confidence, the only other thing as well is the fact that that third place team, what is it, the fourth best third place, that's what we're... that could be our way out of the group. So, as I say, if we scrape through with one of these teams that get only one victory and somehow scrape through on 3 points, we'll take that as well.
By hook or by crook.
Exactly. We'll do what we take what we can. Well, thank you for having me. More than happy to talk Scotland all day.
So our next guest to talk about the Czech Republic is Tom Danicek. Tom, I hope I pronounced that okay.
Yeah, that's actually one of the best pronunciations. Thanks for that.
Kudos, Alex. Okay. Kudos.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. So, for the Czech Republic, they're in a group with Scotland, Croatia, and England. And you know, just to get the ball going, like, what do you see as Czech Republic's chances of getting out of the group or going far in this tournament?
Well, you know what, we definitely have to aim to progress, but at the same time, we hate facing UK sides on their own soil, especially. We haven't beaten England at their home yet. We have only beaten Scotland once there in 1999. So everything is kind of a blurry in this way. And we have lost to them recently as well, just as to Wales and Northern Ireland. So that kind of fills me with pessimism. On the other side, Croatia is not what they were 2 years ago or 3 years ago at the World Cup. So maybe they are there for the taking, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. And who are some of the like key players that people might not be so aware of? Like, obviously, people know of Tomáš Dušek with West Ham and Kufal as well. But who else are kind of going to be, if Czech Republic are going to be successful and get out of this group, who are they going to be kind of relying upon?
Definitely look out for the Jankto and Šik connection up front. One of them is a left winger, sometimes playing centrally in Italy. And Patrick Šik is now playing for Leverkusen in Germany. And he's one of the most complete strikers we've had, at least since the Kolar days. And basically, they've been together ever since under-21s. So they have some chemistry going. And if we are to score from open play, it's almost certain one of them will be involved.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just to rewind a bit, because we talked about it earlier, you said that the matches against Scotland and England are going to be particularly challenging. And then especially with Scotland, there's this extra contentious issue now at hand with the incident that happened in the Rangers match. What was kind of the public reception how was it covered in the Czech Republic? Do you know?
Most of the public has somehow stood behind Kudela. He's always been portrayed as a likable guy, so most people just couldn't imagine he would be even, you know, capable of doing such thing. At the same time, Slavia, the club, probably took some pressure off because they didn't handle the situation very well from the PR standpoint. And then they took the photos, over-the-top photos with all his black teammates following domestic triumph now. So they are kind of trying to put a spin on it. And obviously, it's still an open issue. But yeah, mostly people kind of sided with Kudela, or at least were in some kind of disbelief. But it's been definitely talked about, and you know, even trying to point out that Kamara has past issues and that kind of stuff. It's been quite ugly, the reception, I would say.
And do you think it's affecting the team as a whole, or is everyone professional enough to keep their minds focused on the tournament and the matches?
Well, his profile as a centre back is actually quite unique for our standards, because he's a ball playing centre back. He carries the ball. He can pass it on long distance, and we don't really have any other centre back like that. So even though he's well into his 30s and it's definitely his last tournament, or it was going to be, we very much relied on him, and he would be an important part. But at the same time, I feel this team and even the past Czech teams, they always thrived on adversity. So I would actually bet on them even rallying around and kind of win it for Kudela, which is kind of what Slavia did in that first leg against Arsenal as well, when they were quite okay. And also the slogan, let's win it, for Kudela was predominant.
Okay, yeah. And you talked about the past Czech teams, and there have been in insanely lineups that the Czechs have throughout the football history. Can you think of any particular match that you watched that is very dear to your heart still?
Oh, well, I mean, I think I'm not going to be the only person, Czech or otherwise, to highlight the game against Netherlands at Euro 2004, which is still, I think, right among the most brilliant comebacks in the whole tournament history. And it's not just that it was a turnaround from 0-2 to 3-2. It's also the nature of the goals that, especially the one where Poborský passed it. The commentator actually is famous for his commentary, where he said, "You need to shoot that," and then he. And now he's immortalized with, you know, a fairly bad suggestion because even better solution. That was just a very good memory. Obviously, the tournament didn't end well for us, but yeah, very, very fondly remember.
Where did you watch that match?
You know what? I think I was just at home in a living room. Sadly, I don't have a very good story to surround that. I remember I watched the Euro 2000 final in a cafe in Italy somewhere, and France, which was kind of awkward because obviously they faced Italy in the final. That's not non-Czech related.
No, so any plans for the matches? Do you even have tickets where are you going to watch the matches for this tournament?
I don't have tickets. I haven't been lucky to follow the team as a journalist or otherwise. Especially the volatile nature of this tournament, I guess, makes it even less predictable. And so in COVID, I didn't even bother to buy any tickets. Hopefully the tournament won't suffer in atmosphere, because, you know, there's not one or a couple of host cities in one country. So I hope it's not going to sort of, you know, be without that tournament, that was atmosphere that we are used to.
What would be considered a good tournament for the Czech Republic? Like, is it kind of talked about in the media there that they should be targeting maybe like a quarterfinal or something like this, or is it just limited to try and get out of the group, or like what are the expectations around this Czech team?
Yeah, I think definitely with the expanded format now, when even the third place team can look, can be hopeful of getting out of the group. I think we need to aim for that, especially with, I guess, Scotland would be considered one of the weakest participants at the tournament. So if they are on 0 points, then we would be actually well positioned to even take that third place and book the ticket in the next round. But generally, you know, a tournament without a knockout stage is a disappointment for us, regardless of how strong team we have, because we've made a 7th straight Euro now, which...
Yeah, I was reading that. It's quite an impressive record.
I think only like 4 countries, and all of them would be considered giants, can match that. So,
yeah. No, in Ireland, we can only dream about a record as consistent as that. I would take every 7th Euros. So, yeah, that would be good. We have one final question that we've been asking everyone, and it's... if you could go for a coffee or a beer with a Czech player, past or present, who would it be? Who would it be, and why?
Well, first of all, being Czech, it must be beer, obviously.
Yeah.
Rather than coffee, yeah. But yeah, the squad is kind of full of humble players, actually. So not really big personalities, and even Soček and Sofal, they are famous for being hardworking and not really hyped in their teens. So that makes it kind of hard, but I. That said, there's still Alex Kral, who's reportedly on his way to West Ham. So you guys can be watching him quite soon. And he was actually, when he chose to go to Spartak in Russia, plenty of people were like, why not a top 5 league? He's just going there for money. And he had a very fun explanation when he said that He's actually into Russian rap, into listening Russian music. And so he's keen on Russian language and he's looking forward to learn that language. And then when he made an introductory video for Spartak fans, he actually...
He rapped.
Sorry?
Did he rap?
No. I mean, that would be actually even funnier, but he said a line in Russian that nobody understood. And then when Czech journalists asked what it was, he said, "Everything is curly," which he's famous for those fluffy big hair that Luis has. If you look him up, Alex Kral, he has these massive hair. So basically, it was just in relation to his hair. He said, "Everything is curly."
Everything is curly. Well, it's a brilliant catchphrase.
Exactly.
Yeah, so no, his hair is even more luscious than David Luiz. It's like full, like, Colaccini.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Colaccini is actually even a better. But I remember when Slavia played in Champions League with him as well. He was being called David Luiz for obvious reasons.
I just want to thank you so much for joining us and giving us a bit of an insight into the Czech team. I hope they can redo some of the great Czech teams of the past. It's a big legacy to live up to.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind. and I'm hoping for those 7 straight tournaments for Ireland as well.
Yeah, we'll take it over. Sorry, I hate to break it to you. So this is the last one that Czech Republic qualifies for, and then the next 7 is all ours.
Cool.
See how this one goes. But yeah, thank you so much. Have a good right. one.
Yeah, thank you so well. Much, man. Thanks it was a blast.
Bye bye.
Podcast Network.